Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin. This episode is sponsored by ReviewRobin, a review management software for marketing agencies to help you guys get your clients more positive reviews. You can check that out at getreviewrobin.com. Now, my guest today is Derek Peterson, and his agency, Adapt Media Agency, inspires businesses to change how they market themselves. He believes change is both an art and a science. Steadfast in his commitment to helping others navigate this challenging process, Derek is the person individuals and businesses look to take bold steps towards radical change. Today, we are going to be discussing Derek's journey of building his agency and what he's learned along the way. So thanks so much for joining us today, Derek.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, Julia.
Great. So let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit. So what motivates you as an entrepreneur?
Gosh, that's interesting. I get asked that question a lot, and it's a difficult question to answer because I feel like it's just something that's always been inside of me in terms of what's kind of motivated me.
Yeah.
But ever since I was a little kid, I've always liked to build things. You know, mm-hmm. I was the kid that played with Legos, the kid that, you know, would build the biggest sandcastle on the beach because I enjoyed the process of taking an idea from point A to point B.
Yeah.
And my parents seemed to notice that at a young age and always gave me these toys to play with where I was building, constructing things. So
yeah.
The idea and the concept of being able to change something through building something. So to change or affect or impact a problem by mm-hmm. building something has always appealed to me. And I just started doing it at a young age with Legos. And then it kind of continued from there into a variety of different things that has led me to who I am today, which is so many different businesses and opportunities I like to get involved in from an entrepreneurial perspective. So
very cool. And why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, your journey? So I know you got started in entrepreneurship at a very young age, around 13. So Tell us about that story and then, you know, how it kind of led you into, you know, starting your agency again years later.
Sure. Yeah. So at 13 years old, I grew up in upstate New York in a town called Saratoga Springs. So,
okay.
You know, it's upstate New York. So it's, you know, it's one of these places that we lived in. It was a great community, very nice community. We had about 150 homes when I was about 13 years old. And my father, who I thank him for doing this, but at the time when I was a kid, it used to drive me nuts when I'd say, "Hey, Dad, can I have $20 to go to the mall?" And he'd be like, "For what? Is it a want or is it a need?" I'm like, "Oh, it's a want, Dad." He's like, "Well, go wash the car or go mow the lawn or go do something to make money." So I got sick of asking for it. Now I didn't make my own money. Yeah. I do the same thing to my kids now, but
yeah,
I hated it as a child. So, I said, you know what, Dad, I'm gonna go start my own business, at 13. And so I took the neighborhood phone directory. So he had this, you know, the staple little, group of pages that had the name and the address and the phone number of all the decision makers, right? The people who lived in the homes in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And then we had a lawnmower and I had to mow lawns to get $20 from my dad. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go out and see if I can mow these people's lawns. I noticed at 13 that they hired these grown people to come mow their lawns. And I'm like, they're probably paying a lot for that. I could do that for a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
So I found out what my neighbor was paying the lawn service. It was like $60. So I was like, "Hey, I'll do your yard for $30. He's like, "Oh my gosh, done deal." Right. I was like, "Wow, this might be onto something here. What can I do?"
So cool.
So in February, when I was 13, I was like, "I'm going to call these people now so that when spring comes, I got the deal locked in." So mm-hmm. I called these people. I had no sales skills, no idea what I was doing. Just some 13-year-old kid that was just trying to save people money. And I tried to schedule appointments to come over to quote the yard when the snow would melt. Because it was, mm-hmm. there was snow on the ground. So then I got a lot of appointments. I went over and I started closing some of these job opportunities. And lo and behold, at 13, I had like 18, if I recall my first year, 18 lawns, which is a lot. Wow. I mean, that would sustain a pretty good landscaping company. It actually became overwhelming. Yeah. Actually, I had to get another neighborhood kid to ask his dad if he could use his mower to mow the lawns.
Yeah.
So first summer was a success. I mean, we crushed it. And I started to realize, you know, listen, maybe we can branch out here. Maybe we could start doing some edging, like maybe laying some mulch, washing windows, other things, washing cars. Mm-hmm. And over the course of the years, as it went into, as I got older, that empire grew and it turned into quite a big business.
Wow.
And I didn't have a car right at 13. so I would just walk my mower through the neighborhood with the gas can, like in my hand, like holding onto the handlebars, and just go neighbor to neighbor and just logically map it out.
Yeah.
And taking shortcuts through the woods with the lawnmower and things like that. So it was fun. And it grew to quite the empire until, funny story, it came crashing down when I went into college, because I made my first entrepreneurial mistake in terms of understanding how to manage people, which I didn't at that young age yet, or I was learning. I just went to college. So I just went to college and I left. And I didn't tell anybody who I was mowing their lawns. I left. So my mom calls me at school. This is before cell phones. Hey, Derek, I got a lot of ticked off neighbors calling me, wondering when you're going to mow their lawn. I was like, she's like, did you tell them you were going to college? I was like, no, I didn't. Oops. Sorry, mom. I was like, would you mind giving them a heads up? Cause I was sold. I was in college, you know. There was beer and, like, you know, there was a freedom. It was this whole new thing. So
thanks, mom, so just do me the solid.
Yeah. So needless to say, that was the end of, you know, my name was ruined in that neighborhood as I came to mowing lawns, and I worked at the mall that next summer. So it was, but it was a great run while I had it. And it was kind of really got me to understand the idea of building a business, bring on a team and understanding how to manage people. Cause we ended up having, 5 or 6 other kids in the neighborhood by the time I was a senior doing different things within the neighborhood. So that was the start of the entrepreneurial journey.
That is so interesting. And what amazing experience to have that at such a young age. So tell us how you got into, you know, running a marketing agency. First of all, I'd love to know how you got into digital marketing and then how you started your agency.
Yeah. So after college, I went through and worked in sales for a variety of different companies, selling software, payroll services. I sold medical devices in the operating room. So I was always at a sales capacity, which involves an aspect of marketing, but yeah. It wasn't like I was building websites and setting up pay-per-click advertising at that point. But I understand the concept of, hey, we're trying to sell something here, which is inherently what marketing it is. Yeah. And then I exited corporate America after wearing hats for about 15 years and opened up a medical distribution business. And I owned two of them over the course of about 7 years or so. And it was a great experience because it was like I was now on my own, a grown up, not 13 anymore, pushing a lawnmower through the neighborhood. But now I had, you know, a big boy business selling to physicians because that was the corporate entity that I worked for. I decided to do it on my own. Mm-hmm. And the one aspect I found with the two companies that I had started was I loved the marketing aspect of it. I loved selling to recruit salespeople. I loved selling the product to the physicians. I loved building everything around it, but I didn't like healthcare. So I realized there was many things about healthcare that just weren't in alignment with what I wanted, and decided with my wife, I got remarried, years ago now. And we made a decision that we wanted to create a lifestyle that gave us a lot of freedom and autonomy to travel. So I said, what business can I open that is in alignment with who I am and what I want to do, what I enjoy as a human being at this stage of my life, you know, in my 40s, I'm like, I'm done going and working and doing things for the sheer purpose of making money. I want to do something I enjoy. And yeah. I want something that provides autonomy where I can build a business that I can do it from a laptop in, you know, Haiti or wherever, whenever I want. So, mm-hmm. So I decided that I really love marketing. I really loved helping businesses. And I started doing some consulting while I owned the medical distribution business for a self-storage facility. And they paid me a lot of money to do it. And I found, I was like, you know, maybe this is something I want to do. That turned into another consulting gig. And then I decided to sell my position with the other medical company and start my own marketing firm at that point, just to go all in. I was like, I'm putting on, sliding all the chips in.
Yeah.
We're going to go for this. And so we opened a digital marketing agency, which is now DAT Media Agency, which has grown tremendously since we started. Mm-hmm. And then we also opened a travel agency. So we're like, we're going to do businesses and things that we want to do. And then we got married, traveled all the way around the globe. We literally went all the way around the world over 2 months. We started our marketing firm, which was kind of crazy. I had like two clients at that time. I was just starting, but it allowed me to do it remotely. I could never do that now because we've grown so big, but it was a great opportunity and a nice jump off point from us. But that's how I got into from mowing lawns to running pay-per-click ads.
So interesting. I love that story. And so what were the biggest challenges that you had to overcome at the start of your journey when you launched your agency?
Probably a couple of them. One of the biggest challenges was, okay, what services am I going to offer, right? So when you look at digital marketing, it's like, do you want to start with everything all at once? Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to do everything all at once. I actually didn't understand it. And so I picked things that I felt made the most sense at that time. So it was choosing, that was one thing. Mm-hmm. B was naturally, okay, how do I get customers, right?
Yeah.
And it's funny, as a digital marketing agency, we actually today do very little paid marketing because we have other creative ways to bring the leads in. So I was like, I want to do it without actually having to do digital marketing for it, meaning I actually can do paid advertising. We've been able to actually do that very successfully through a variety of techniques and then, you know, deploy those techniques with our customers. So getting customers was hard. And then I think something that every business and entrepreneur deals with today, and that's building an effective team and then the infrastructure with that team. So as I mentioned before, I wanted autonomy. I wanted to be able to not be nailed down to a physical office where I needed to be in place. So what systems need to be created to be able to hire the right talent and effectively create a team environment without that water cooler conversation type of environment?
Right.
I like that. And at an earlier stage in my life, I would want that, but I'm now of a different, you know, I'm in a different spot. I don't want to have to get in my car and like drive somewhere and, you know, park my car, go up the elevator and like, and be in that same room where I could rather have this conversation with somebody while I'm sitting on a beach in Cabo for a week. And then maybe in my office the next week and have that freedom to move around. And that's, it was built with that premise in mind. So figuring that out, okay, was definitely a big challenge. And so those are probably the big three, the systems, the people, getting customers. Those were big challenges in the beginning.
Okay. And so how did you tackle the challenge of getting more customers?
So in the beginning, I've been fortunate over the years to have grown a good network. You know, when you're in sales, you start to realize your network is your net worth, determines your net worth. So
yeah.
I leverage that. Same with the travel business that we had. We leverage that. So let people know like, hey, this is what I do. And from that, brought on some early customers to which I felt it was important to deliver a phenomenal experience. And you always want to deliver a phenomenal experience, but I literally went like over, above and beyond there. In hopes of getting referrals from it. And sure enough, that led to other referrals, which opened up other doors, which then opened up different doors, which then had me branch into different services because I'd be speaking with a client that wanted a website built. And they're like, hey, can you do SEO? I remember the first time I got asked that, I was like, sure, yeah. They were like, do you do that? Yep, we do that. We didn't do that.
Yeah.
So I needed to hire the I had to triage that, you know, and figure out how to do it. So kind of, I hate to say it, but fake it till you make it. But I did that and it worked. And we've been able to, you know, like today we do a ton of SEO for clients and we've got a full team and all that. But in the beginning, I mean, it was a scramble on the back end to the client. They were none the wiser.
Yeah.
All they want to see is results. So, yeah. So that's really kind of how it started. And then for me being on podcasts, which is ironic because we're talking right now.
Interesting.
Is being on podcast. Yeah. So in specific niches. So one of my first clients was actually a multifamily real estate syndicator. So they raised capital for big multifamily projects and he was a newer beginning guy and he asked for his website built. So we built it. Mm-hmm. And he was like, hey, you have a podcast. I'm like, he's like, you want to come on talk about marketing for syndicators? Like, sure. But once I went on that show, my phone started to ring. And I was like, oh, wow. I was like, that's interesting. So I built another syndicator's website and they have a podcast. So I went on their show, which led to another one. And now to date, we're probably the largest, if not one of the largest marketing firms that services the real estate syndication space across multiple asset classes, mainly multifamily and self-storage. So we've built for probably 30 different brands now. Mm-hmm. And I've been on so many podcasts that we now offer as a service, as a company, we produce podcasts for a dozen different companies. So we actually do all the production, the audio, the video, cutting the social media, the website, all that stuff. So it started with one client who asked me to be on his podcast, it grew literally like that. Mm-hmm. It just opportunities. And as an entrepreneur, you take a look at that opportunity and say, hey, do I want to get into that? Yes or no. I've said no to a lot. And to stay within my lane, but yes to a good bit as well. And that's kind of how we expanded our product service line.
That's really interesting. So I know that now you are pretty much, you're mostly referral based. That's how you bring in your clients. Do you have any techniques to stop prospects from procrastinating and close the sale with them?
Ooh, good question. Yeah. So we use a CRM right now we've dabbled with a few of them. We were with Pipe Drive at first. We use monday.com right now for our internal project management. But then we use Go High Level, white branded version of it for the purposes of my CRM. I had HubSpot for a while. Mm-hmm. And when I was in sales working in corporate America, I hated CRMs. Like I hated doing it. It was just like such a pain.
Yeah.
But now when you're in your own business, you'll see the value in it.
Yeah.
And like, so I put it in there. So to me, I find that getting procrastinated customers pushed over the edge just requires a professional persistence. In sales. I mean, you got to continually just touch base with them and having that CRM where I can, if I'm trying to touch base with 15 different people, set my reminders in there and my automations to do that on my behalf, then that works. That tends to work really well for me. Also setting the expectation from a sales perspective is like, hey, what's the best way to follow up with you? When are you looking to make a decision? Mm-hmm. Is it okay if I call you on Thursday? So when I do call them on Thursday and they don't get upset, I'm like, you know, well, as you said, I'm calling you on Thursday for your decision.
They're expecting it.
If they give you a hard time, you're kind of like, hey dude, you said I could call you on Thursday. And for me, I've graduated. And for those listening, like we all start with literally like scraping and clawing for any bit of business we can get. Right. Mm-hmm. And we're like, we'll deal with somebody who's a total jerk, just for the purposes of like earning an income. And then things shift to where you may deal with somebody you can tell right off the rip, because you've talked to this type of person a few times, that they're going to be difficult and they're probably going to be a drain on your time. And you know what, their price goes up. And if I don't get it, I don't get it. Fine. But their price is a little bit more than perhaps someone else. And it's knowing when I think it's important to push people over the edge, but there's also a good time to walk. Where it just doesn't make any sense. It's a draw on your time. So clearly defining that line for you and what that is on your stage of the business is, I think, something that everyone needs to do when evaluating that question.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And like you mentioned, that follow-up, it's so important. Do you have any creative ideas for follow-up? Because you know, you always want to be delivering value. Is there anything unique that you used to use to follow up with your clients or still use?
Gosh. I try to do a couple things that'll do. Sending an email can get a little boring, right? And get kind of buried in email. So yeah. I like to use text. So one is I use text, and a lot of times I'll create a video that's specifically tailored to that individual, like a Loom, and there's a couple other softwares that I use, Vineyard, yeah. To be able to create that sort of personalized message back to them. And I've had that happen to me, and I was like, wow, this person took the time to do that. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Mailing them something actually that's handwritten has been something that's been effective for me as well. It's totally old school. Mm-hmm. It's totally like out of left field, and doing something a little bold or brash, which is what I've done before, is I'll take a piece of paper, just completely blank piece of paper, and I'll staple a crisp, gotta go to the bank, get a crisp $1 bill to it. And I'll staple it to the middle of the sheet of paper. And I'll just write a little handwritten note like, hey, it's awesome speaking to you last week. Really excited on helping you earn a lot of these in the near future with working together. And I'll draw an arrow to the dollar and I'll just sign it. And that's it. And I'll handwrite the envelope. Because when you get a handwritten envelope in the mail, you're like, what's this?
Yeah. Right?
You don't see those. And we got to handwrite the envelope. It can't be typed. It's gotta be, and my handwriting is terrible. So, but it is what it is. And I just write it on there and I send it. And that usually never fails. You know, if you get a dollar stapled, I had one person send the dollar bill back.
Really?
They're like, no thanks. So I was like, oh, at least you sent it back. So I sent them five. So I was like, I stapled a $5 bill. I was like, just change your mind. And I never heard from them, and they kept the $5, but it was worth the shot.
$5.
Yeah. So
I love that. Yeah, that's such a creative idea. Yeah. No, I love that. That's awesome. Very cool. So I'd love to talk about how you create happy, loyal clients.
It's a great question. So in terms of creating happy, loyal clients, I think first of all, you need to deliver, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got to set proper expectations, mm-hmm. and make sure they understand the expectations. So we have processes inside of Monday, our emailing and texting system, which clearly aligns out when we engage, what's going to happen, how it's going to happen. And then in terms of onboarding, the process of getting started, because that's where a lot of work is done in that initial onboarding phase. And then after that, it's maintaining. If you're doing something that's results-based, like SEO or pay-per-click, giving them complete transparency to what you're doing and your results. Mm-hmm. So setting the expectations, being very clear and honest about them, right? Like, hey, this is going to take you 3-4 months to get you ranked. Not like lying to like get them the sale. Oh, we'll have you ranked next week. Mm-hmm. I don't know what other marketing firms are doing, but I know salespeople can, and you know, they can embellish the truth a little bit to get the deal. Then you're working backwards, right? So set the bar relatively low, and then exceed those expectations, I found creates loyal evangelists for your brand. Mm-hmm. And then also over communicating. So we use Monday, and I also use text and email, like everyone else, to be able to over communicate throughout the process, like way ahead of time. Don't wait for them to come to you and say like, hey, where are we at? Like, what's going on with the website? Is it built yet?
Yep.
Because at that point, you know, they're frustrated maybe, or whatnot, or maybe they're just checking in. But bottom line, if you over communicate within your process, I find that to be helpful. So then they have a good experience. And when they have a good experience, that's when they're, I think, more apt to you know, refer you and be an evangelist for your brand. And that's where the referrals come from. I personally try to be the communication liaison with my team, communicates with them. But I always like to just touch base with them personally, check in with them, because they bought from me. They mm-hmm. put trust in me as the firm to be able to do their job. So people buy from who they know, like, and trust, and they felt that way about our ability to do it. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to. I think the other tip would be, don't disappear. Be present and continue to check in with them.
Yeah, I love that. So do you have any productivity hacks to help save you time in your day-to-day?
Gosh, I wish I had more. It's productivity hacks is something I work on every day, every week, because as we get busier, as we bring on more people, you know, it comes with its set of respective challenges. So, you know, productivity hack wise is it, use your systems, right? So understand the systems that are out there. I've tried systems that worked for others, didn't work for me. And committing to, okay, if you're going to get a system, use the system to get the benefit from the system. So for example, I mentioned we use Monday as a tool for us to talk internally as a team, but then also to talk externally with our client about respective projects. That's right. Just a huge, tremendous tool for us at a very reasonable price. That's been great. And then using other systems and tools that we have to be able to get the same outcome and to automate things. Mm-hmm. So, but you got to be careful. Sometimes I think you can over automate because not everything is always the same, right?
Yes.
And sometimes you lose the personal touch. So it's a balance between automation and personal touch. And then lastly, you know, creating products and creating the engagement that you have with your customers that are something that can just be somewhat on a monthly recurring basis, I think has been a big productivity hack for us, where it's just not so we do something and we're done. First of all, it's great for the bottom line, but second of all, that allows us to get into a cadence with that individual, which helps with on the productivity side.
Very good. So I have a question about when you are implementing a new system. So, you know, when you're introducing a new piece of software, how do you work with your team to get everyone on the same page and smoothly implement it?
So first it's going to be to discuss with the team what their frustrations are with our current process that, that needs a system to potentially help with that. So I guess it's to kick the dust and dirt up internally so that and sort of drive the knife of pain deeper into those employees and hear from them like, okay, why is this frustrating for you? So that, and then offer them some suggestions so that of options we could potentially implement to alleviate that pain, right? And let the team sort of collectively decide, because you've built up that pain. It's just, I'm selling it to them, basically. It's a sales process of that. I'm selling it to them. So they realize and recognize like, hey, this is, man, they have this really stink. You know what? Derek offered these options. Like, hey, that would really help. Yeah, I would love that. So they were the ones that are making the decision to bring in the new software.
Oh, interesting.
It's not me. Yeah, it's not me coming in there with a steel fist being like, you know, we stink at this. This is how we're doing it. Now,
yeah.
That may be how I feel. But that's a hard way to get somebody to adopt something and bring it in with open arms. Like,
yeah.
But if it's their idea, right. And a lot of folks on the team, they recognize they're the ones dealing with the problem, right. They're the ones that are frustrated. Like, hey, yeah. What do you think we should do? You know, ask and listen, offer suggestions, lean them sort of the way you think it may be, or moreover, just listen, because they have oftentimes they have better ideas than, I mean, way better, excuse me, ideas that come from my ears. So listen to them, implement their idea, let them be the ones that decide, because then they're going to be more apt to take it into consideration. Then decide as a team, you know, timelines and goals and how we're going to roll this out. And then after that, it's pray for the best, because it's definitely also, you know, no matter how you draw it up, it's always going to have his little problems. And so just expect that, understand it, be empathetic of it, and just say, hey, you know what? It didn't work today. Let's do better tomorrow. So yeah, to me, a lot of us allow the team to be the one to come to that decision, set expectations, and just hold people accountable. And that's always been with anything in life, really. I mean, parenting, you know, all that stuff. It's
pretty much
the same formula, works pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's really interesting. So knowing what you know now, is there anything that you would have done differently when you were first starting out with your agency?
Oh, wow. I feel like I should have a lot of answers to this, but nothing's actually really coming to mind for me. It's been a blessed journey that has been, because a lot of those lessons that I learned, while some might have been painful lessons, like a loss of a customer or something like that, they sort of had to happen because it taught me something within the business. So yeah. Any type of failure that I've had along the way, I don't view it as a failure. I view it as a lesson pretty much with anything in life. You're like, okay, this happened. Like, all right, it sucks, right? But why did it happen? What can I learn from it?
Exactly.
Or how can I elevate from this experience? So there isn't something that's glaring. Maybe other than, not taking, probably there would have been some clients I would not have taken on their business. That kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about, you get this sense from certain people that their expectations that they're trying to achieve, like you just want the business. And they may have expectations that are just unrealistic for any marketing firm.
Yeah.
And you say yes to them, like, we'll get it done, right?
Yeah.
And then it's just a total time suck for you.
Yeah.
Because you're pouring all your energy into one client, it's taking away from other clients. So it's just to become sort of an internal cancer for what, right? To have somebody, another customer. So there's definitely people now that I've gotten to that point where if I feel they're going to be a personality issue, I'll just say, hey, we may not be a good fit for you on what you're looking to do. Or I might just make their price three times as much, because if I'm going to deal with this person, I'm going to earn from it. I think I'm going to be straight up with you about that.
Yeah.
Julia. So, then walking from it, because in the end, it's going to disrupt the machine that all these agency listeners are who are listening right now, that it's just going to, you know, it's like, hey, you build this great machine with all these moving parts and systems and automation, right? So imagine this big mechanical machine, and then you throw a shovel in it, right? Or a wrench.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it just crushes it. So, you know, keep that in mind. Definitely. Don't be afraid to say no. Even if it's a big deal, I've done that now. It's like, it's just like people have offered you a lot. I'm like, no, I'm good, because you seem like you're nuts and I just don't want to deal with you.
So, yeah. No, that's just a really good way of putting it, when you describe it as the machine that you've built and you don't want to throw a wrench in the gears. And a lot of people wouldn't think about a potential client, you know, more revenue in your agency is potentially damaging that. But if they're not a good fit at the end of the day and they're going to be high maintenance or difficult, it makes sense to, you know, just elegantly say, sorry, we're not a good fit. And avoid working with that person. So where do you see Adapt Media Agency in 5 years' time?
So Adapt Agency, and I'm wearing this shirt for those, I don't know if this is viewed as well, but the name Adapt and the Adapt brand is something that's near and dear to my heart. So that word Adapt and the idea of change is near and dear to my heart too. Mm-hmm. So really the agency, we've gone through this expansion, and expansion to helping. We've got a sort of a spinoff of Adapt Agency right now called Adapt Family, which is trying to provide and help people change different aspects of their life around their health, around their wealth, and their self, right? So we have Adapt Health. We have AdaptMyHealth.com that we just launched, AdaptMyWealth.com, and then Adapt Self is coming later. Mm-hmm. But essentially what it is it helps people, it's a community of content. So it's very similar to the podcast. It's a show, it's audio, it's video, but it's creating a community environment where people can help become a healthier version of themselves or a wealthier version of themselves.
Yeah.
So in both communities have, involve content, but also action that person gets to take. So on the health side, there are these health challenges that you can enroll in. They're free and they're all about getting people to be healthier naturally. Mm-hmm. And then on the wealth side, it's a community of investors that over the last year, we've as a community get access to bigger investment opportunities that we wouldn't as a single individual. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned before, I work with a lot of real estate syndicators. So I've kind of got into that investing sort of business through those relationships. And then the agency is supporting those off-reach brands under that Adapt name. But the agency as a whole, we're looking to really continue to grow, over the next 5 years, we would like to 10x what we're doing, expand, and continue to add more services to what we do. Right now, it's from a digital perspective, we pretty much do everything. So everything you expect from a digital marketing agency with the addition of the podcasting and all of that. Mm-hmm. But we really want to be a one-stop shop for people that can come to us no matter what it is that they're looking for, and be able to help, they can get everything in one spot. Cause I know
it's awesome.
We work with some clients that they get their Facebook's being done by this person. They got, website by this guy, and that works. But when you're trying to create this ecosystem and this brand with the top of the funnel, right, your website and all that stuff, but then mm-hmm. the bottom of the funnel, being able to create all those systems and automations, that's sort of the product we're looking to deliver to people as we continue to grow.
Very cool. I'm very excited for you guys. And would you like to talk about your podcast? Where can our listeners check out your podcast if they're interested?
Yeah. So there are, with these two new launch podcasts, there's Adapt My Health. So if you just go to www.adaptmyhealth or just go to Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, just to Adapt My Health, you'll see the Adapt Health podcast. Mm-hmm. And again, it's very focused on building towards natural wellness and getting back to being a healthier version of you. Mm-hmm. And then Adapt My Wealth. So it's just adaptmywealth.com. Or if you put in Spotify, iTunes, or YouTube, you'll find Adapt My Wealth. You'll see that big sort of like letter A to know that it's under the Adapt brand. And in both those companies, podcasts and all that are hopefully a great place to help people just be a healthier and wealthier version of themselves. With Adapt Self coming out next, which is really more about just having the right mindset, relationships, mm-hmm. love, that other very, very important part of our life.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Definitely got to go check those out. So we're getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but first we have the Fast Five, which are five rapid fire questions. So what's a awesome book you've read that's made an impact on you?
I think the title was the Power of One, or The One Thing. I think it was The Power of One. I may be getting the title wrong. But it was a book that basically, as the title would insinuate, it's about the idea and concept of just doing one thing really well, which I don't do very well. I should read the book again because I got too many things going on, but that was that was a great book.
Okay. Awesome. And what does your morning routine look like?
All right. So I get up every morning I try to get up every morning around the same time, but I do not set an alarm clock. So trying to get the circadian rhythm down so that my body wakes up naturally at the right time versus being awoken from a deep sleep. So I got nailed down between like 6 and 6:10 is usually when I wake up. I have a glass of sort of alkaline water. So it's just lemon inside of a fresh glass of filtered water. Mm-hmm. I drink that. It's the first thing that I do. Then I stretch and I work out. So first thing I do before I eat, typically intermittent fast, on a 16-8 schedule. So, 16 hours I'm not eating, and then 8 hours during the day is where I'll eat. So I'll get that workout done. Then typically have a little bit of green tea, and I do what's called box breathing, which I won't get into, but it's just sort of a way to sort of kind of calm me down after the workout to get more into a mental focus, get the endorphins running, I'll have breakfast. And then at that point, shower up and we're off to the actual work part of the day.
Very cool. I love that. It sounds like an amazing morning routine. And is there a CEO that you follow or study?
Honestly, there isn't. I follow so many, but probably the one CEO that I probably follow and study the most, or who's made a good impact in my life, is, I found Tony Robbins, like many who have found Tony Robbins. So in terms of a person who I like, their character, what they're about, what they're, how they serve, mm-hmm. it would be Tony Robbins.
Yeah, he's awesome. And what is your favorite online tool?
Ooh, favorite online tool. Right now, I probably have to say probably monday.com is probably made the biggest impact in our business.
Okay. And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
Should have studied these fast five before you sent them. I'm not being so fast in my replies. Repeat the question if you don't mind. I just want to make sure I nail it.
What's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
The importance of hiring good people.
It's a good one.
Is probably, yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Derek. It was a pleasure to have you on the show, and I appreciate you sharing all your insight with us of growing your agency and sharing your journey as an entrepreneur with us. So thank you again.
All right. Thank you, Julia.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.